Hello, and welcome back to the MRS Lab podcast, the show from FLETSMR, where we investigate and explore topics on the fringes of market research. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Jack Gorman, co-founder of Critica Science, to discuss the firm's research into vaccine hesitancy and how it's informing online interventions.
Oh, I'm so glad to be with you today, and thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure, and it's great to have you here. And I think this is going to be a fascinating conversation. But before we jump right into it, could you give our listeners a brief introduction to your background, how you came to be where you are, and Critica Science?
Sure. So I trained actually as a psychiatrist right after medical school and went right into research, Columbia University, for most of my career. And then a few years ago, I wrote a book, which I'll talk about again in a second, with my daughter, Sarah Gorman, called Denying to the Grave, about the basis for science denial. And that led us to want to be able to try to do something about some of the issues that we identified in the book, about why people have difficulty accepting scientific consensus. And so together we founded this nonprofit organization called Critica, which is devoted to trying to help people to understand what scientific consensus is all about and to counteract actual misinformation about science and health.
And that journey that you've been on with your research into vaccine hesitancy and your journey with Critica, it must have been quite challenging. You're approaching quite delicate topics in very polarizing times. Can you walk us through what that journey has been like?
Sure. So you're absolutely right that it's a highly, an unfortunately highly politicized area where we think that science should be foremost in people's minds, not politics, when it comes to vaccines. And it really all began when my daughter Sarah was getting her PhD in Boston and became very interested in a phenomenon that actually began in the UK. Of people believing that the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine can cause autism. And although this has been very soundly debunked by medical research, she was interested in the fact that there are still many, many people who believe that, who believe that these vaccines are unsafe, despite the overwhelming scientific information to the contrary. And we started wondering, as we talked about all the different examples of where scientific consensus says one thing, but at least a substantial number of people insist on believing something else. And that got us involved in this whole area of vaccine hesitancy and what is behind it. And then we began working specifically in the area of the coronavirus vaccines, the COVID-19 vaccines. In the United States, we still have about 20 to 30% of the population are not vaccinated. And a substantial number of those people are directly opposed to vaccination. But the majority of those people are still mostly fearful of vaccination. And one of the things that we came to understand in writing our book and in studying this phenomenon is that you can't simply counteract misinformation of vaccines by providing correct information. It's necessary to provide correct information, but not sufficient, because the basis for a lot of vaccine hesitancy is fear. And it comes from all kinds of concerns, worries, and fears about safety and efficacy, and is kind of supported by membership in social groups and by what people see on social platforms. And so we developed this idea that you have to really understand and find common ground with people who have fears like this and who are susceptible and vulnerable to misinformation in order to try to counteract it. And only then could you supply correct information that people would be open-minded enough to listen to. And so we began applying a technique called motivational interviewing to our work. Motivational interviewing was originally developed by psychologists who were interested in trying to help people with substance abuse problems. where they learned, kind of analogous to what we were just saying about vaccines, that you can't simply tell people the facts about substance abuse and expect them to stop using substances. You can't say to somebody, you're drinking too much and it's bad for you and it's going to hurt your liver and therefore you must stop. Rather, what you have to do is find out, and motivational interviewing works this way, find out what are their motivations, what is their motivation to change, what are their goals, what are their values, and only by understanding that can you then begin to engage the person in change and trying to help them to change. And similarly, our work is based on trying to understand what are the basic features that promote vaccine hesitancy. What are people's worries, fears, goals? Where can we find common ground with them? What can we agree? And only then do we feel we can come in with offering correct information.
And that's quite a journey, isn't it? From people's surface level beliefs and statements all the way down to what is forming the basis of that. And from what I understand, that's what this technique of motivational interviewing has allowed you to do. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. So, you know, we can see on often, and we do this work online. So we look for examples of posts online where somebody says something that isn't true about the COVID vaccines, for example. And instead of saying, that's not true, here are the facts, the first thing we say is, can you tell me more about what your ideas are? And tell me how you came to understand that or believe that. And then we try to point out that, for example, with most people who are afraid of the vaccines, we can share a common value that we all want to be safe. We all want to protect ourselves and our families from bad health. So we're all seeking the same goal ultimately, which is to remain free of disease and to be healthy. And eventually, in these threads that we have with people online, we come to say, well, here is my understanding of the information and here's some reliable sources that you can look at. We try to also promote self-efficacy, that is to help people to see that they are capable of understanding the science and making informed decisions themselves.
And I understand that from your work online, you're not just looking for people who are the victims of misinformation, that you're looking directly for the sources, the posts, the people who are active in that community, I guess.
Right. We do both. We are interested in the people who are promulgating misinformation. And here, sometimes we do get into contentious situations, because some of them are acolytes for anti-vaccination sentiments. And we don't actually think we're going to change those people's minds. Those people are committed to an anti-vaccination stance, and we probably aren't going to change their minds. And most of their motivations are not really based in science, but in politics, a lot in the US on partisan politics and, you know, Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives taking different positions. So we don't think we're going to change their mind. We're interested in all the people who are listening in on these conversations. We call them bystanders, because we don't want them to fall prey to this kind of misinformation. So we do go right on those platforms where the acolytes are, and we do counteract their misinformation, but always with an ear to all the people who are listening in.
I think it sounds like a very self-aware approach as well. I think there's a tendency in a lot of these interventions to want to, you know, show the light, to be right and to affect everybody. But from what you're saying, it sounds like it, in a lot of cases, the most effective approaches involve an element of understanding your audiences to a degree, that there are people who are affected by this in different ways, and where you're likely to win and where you're not.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, there's always been a tendency on the part of scientists to preach and to say, I'm a scientist and here are the facts and you should believe me. And that does not work, especially now with the internet, where information doesn't just go from one in one direction, top down, from science to consumer, but rather goes horizontally on networks that are connected to each other. And people can get information in lots of different ways. So we have to think now that you aren't simply going to be able to preach to people and act as if they are going to just say, okay, fine, those are the facts, I'll agree with them. Plus, there has to be a greater degree of humility among scientists like myself, because indeed science is complicated and often contradictory. And we saw that in the saga with face masks, where experts first thought face masks are not that important, and then the advice has evolved over time. There are very good reasons based in the scientific research why that advice changed over time. But we also have to understand that that's very confusing to people and will lead people to think, well, maybe those scientists don't know what they're doing. And unless you can be humble and understand that and where those anxieties are coming from, we feel you're not going to get very far in helping people to make informed decisions about their health.
I definitely think there's a lot that we can take away from that. But I'm afraid, as much as I want to continue talking about this because it's fascinating, we are coming up to our 10-minute mark. Before we have to go, Jack, what is the one key thing you would like our listeners to take away from today's episode?
I'd like listeners to really realize that everyone is capable of making evidence-based, informed decisions about their health, and that the way to go about this is to be skeptical when you see somebody who is absolutely certain about something that is contradicted by consensus of scientists, to be skeptical and to seek out reliable sources of information.
What a great note to end the show on. Jack, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it as well.
And thank you to everybody listening. We'll be back next month with another episode. Until then, I've been your host, Chris Martin, and this has been the MRX Lab.